Welcome to So and So, brought to you by Bernina, Made to Create. I'm Meg Goodman, and you're about to enjoy a casual conversation with a special member of the sewist and quilting community. A conversation about how they got started, what inspires them, what excites them, and their connection to this community. Our guest today is Brooks Ann Camper, owner of Brooks Ann Bespoke LLC. She's a former professional costumer, including on Broadway, and a couturier of one-of-a-kind bridal wear who teaches her unique style of custom sewing online. Brooks Ann grew up in small-town East Texas, loved school, playing dress-up, and making things. But even though her grandmother was a professional seamstress, she never gave sewing much thought until her senior year of undergrad. After graduating from Centenary College in Louisiana, she was accepted into the costuming internship program at Yale and then earned her MFA in costume production at the University of North Carolina. After grad school, she moved to New York City and worked as a milliner for Broadway shows. When she eventually left New York, she left sewing too, but only briefly, and eventually started her own couture bridal wear business. Since 2009, Brooks Ann's been blogging her behind-the-scenes process and sharing her love of sewing online. Her writing on her creations has been featured in Seamwork, Threads Magazine, Huffington Post, The Knot, and People Magazine. She's appeared on the Love to Sew podcast and teaches a couture hand sewing intensive at Camp Workroom Social. She's known in her community for her online sewing school, where she teaches sewists to design, draft, and sew their own high-quality, custom-fit garments. Sewing now for more than 25 years, Brooks Ann lives in Cedar Grove, North Carolina, with her husband Charles and dog Nimbus. Hi, Brooks Ann, and welcome to So and So.
Hi, Meg. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's good to have you here. You know, you and I were talking before we started this, and you've got some amazing stories to tell that just touch me personally. So I'm really looking forward to getting into this. Now, the first time you were introduced to sewing was in some ways for you a punishment. So tell us about this.
Yes. The sewing origin story. So my sewing origin story is pretty unique because I didn't learn to sew as a kid or as a hobby or even because it was something that I was interested in. I was a senior in my senior year as a theater major. I was cast in a play and the department head noticed backstage that I had wrinkled up my dress. And he told me to go to the costume shop and iron it before going back on stage. And I told him the truth, which is that I had never used an iron before. And
how old were you?
21.
Oh my goodness.
So he did not like this response. And this man, Bob Busick, he was a brilliant, grumpy old man who ran the whole department and directed many of the productions. Brilliant guy, but grouchy. But the side of him that I knew less about was that he also loved to sew. And so when he found out that I was a senior, 21-year-old person, and I didn't know how to use an iron, he assigned me against my will to work with him in the costume shop for the next production. And that, he'd teach me a thing or two. and he did. And I unexpectedly just had a total blast making costumes with the grumpy old man. And I found out that I really liked sewing. So it all kind of started as a chance encounter. Like, I always wonder where I would be if I hadn't wrinkled up that dress, or if Busick had been in a better mood that day, or what if I had just gone in and ironed that dang thing. But
sure,
that's how it all started. That wrinkled up skirt changed the trajectory of my life.
You know, it's amazing how situations like this really do change course for us, or chart the course for us.
I had no
idea. So it's a good thing you didn't know how to iron. That was a good thing.
It's true.
Now, so I love this next thing because almost as a joke, you decided to complete an application for an internship at the Yale School of Drama. And that's not a lightweight school at all. Now, the thing is, they accept only one costuming intern each year. So tell us a story. What happened?
Well, what happened is they accepted me. I'm not sure why. I had only ever really worked on that one college show before, so I was an absolute beginner to sewing and costuming. But I'm actually still friends with the man who accepted my application, Tom McAllister. And so I guess we just hit it off or something. There was one phone interview, and then I was moving from Louisiana to Connecticut to start my Ivy League internship in sewing, which was a topic that I had become super interested in, but I knew very little about.
Do you remember anything about that interview?
Well, what I remember about the interview is that I didn't go to it. So, you know, when I sent in the application, and they wanted me to fly to Connecticut to do this interview, I was, you know, positive that I was not going to be accepted. So I was really just kind of trying to save some money and time, you know, because it seemed like it was going to be a waste of time for me to fly from Louisiana to Connecticut to go to this interview. So I told them that I was too busy in the costume shop or something, and that I couldn't make it to the interview, but I could do a phone interview. And so I was in Bob Busick's office, and I don't know what I said on that call, but it worked.
So I love this. You didn't know how to iron.
Yeah.
Then you said you weren't showing up for your interview, but
yeah.
But life is taking you, it's dragging you down this path.
It's true.
Now, there's a story about the first dress you made at Yale. Tell us about that.
Okay, so, well, the internship at Yale was honestly incredible. So as the intern, I would work in the costume shop with the staff half of the day. And then for the other half, I got to take classes with the Yale MFA students, any class I wanted to. And like, this is a very prestigious program. And so as an absolute beginner, I was all of a sudden taking master's level courses in pattern making and design and sewing. And I was learning on the job how to create one of a kind couture level garments, all while working on the costumes of the shows. And so the first dress that I ever made was for a Yale production of Anton Chekhov's The Seagull. And it was a big, fancy, bustle dress with a huge collar and leg of mutton sleeves that I cut from silk that was over $100 a yard. And it was gorgeous. And the best thing was that I didn't know enough about sewing to know that this was supposed to intimidate me. I just tried to fit in, and I pretended like I knew what I was doing. And through that process, I produced some really amazing sewing as a total beginner. I was working with professionals, like as a professional, when I was in the workshop. And then I was also taking these graduate level costuming courses with some amazingly talented classmates and from the finest professors. I mean, my costume design professor was Jane Greenwood, who's been nominated for like 20-something Tony Awards. And here she is working with me, little Miss, I just learned how to use an iron. So just, it was special.
Now there's a really good story about your 23rd birthday. Tell us about that.
Okay. Well, it was a coincidence that it was my birthday. But it certainly made it memorable because that day my design class went on a field trip. And so we all went to New York City with our professor, Jane Greenwood, to see a Broadway show that she designed. But first, we stopped by all the costume shops that had made all the costumes for the shows, which was amazing. And we got to see the costumes for the show that we were watching. We got to see those backstage before the show. And then that evening, we all had a dinner at her Chelsea brownstone. And so like, here I was like mingling with some super talented people doing like super amazing things. I mean, the whole Yale experience was dreamy, and I'm so grateful and lucky to have it as the beginning of my sewing story.
So what was the most important thing that you learned while you were an intern at Yale?
Well, I think the most important thing that I learned was, well, so I did a whole lot of sewing. So, you know, I was the beginner. So my position was the stitcher. And so I didn't make any of the patterns while I was at Yale, but I was taking those pattern making classes. And so I really learned that I had this love for pattern making. The best part was that it was this, it was custom patterns for individual bodies, you know, how to take a sketch or an image and turn it into reality and every little step of the process from start to finish. And so I think, you know, learning in a non-fashion environment, you know, because actors, you know, come in all shapes and sizes, and designers design all kinds of crazy things. And so it was just a neat way to learn how to sew where, you know, the possibilities are endless. You're starting from scratch. And then, you know, I was starting from scratch in this unique environment where I had, you know, all the best tools and all the best teachers. And so, I mean, it's just an amazing start to how this all, you know, the trajectory of my sewing journey.
So when you left Yale, you went to the University of North Carolina for an MFA in costume production. When you got in line to do this, you had less than 2 years experience at the time. And I think history kind of repeated itself. So tell us how you got into the program.
Well, I guess why I was chosen is a question for someone else. But I had the same experience where I did not think I was going to get into this program. And so I did the phone interview thing again. I had never been to North Carolina before in my life. I told them that I could only do a phone interview, and it worked. So
you're pretty successful with those phone interviews.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't know that I've pulled it again since then. You know, this was 20 something years ago, but it was working for me at that time. And I think it was just that I didn't really have the funds to be flying around and testing out, you know, schools that I didn't think I was going to get into. And so I guess, you know, and I guess why I did get into it is that it's such a niche degree that maybe not a lot of people know about. And so mm-hmm. nearly every school teaches a costume design degree, but my degree and my area of interest is costume production, which is the technical side of costuming. And mm-hmm. so at Yale, I realized that I loved the technical production side of costuming much more than design. So even with this world famous costume design professor, reading the play and doing the research and coming up with the ideas for what each character will wear and drawing the pretty sketches was fun. And I liked it, but I was far more interested in making things. I liked taking the designer's sketch and creating the pattern and fitting the actor and cutting and sewing the fabrics and the actual hands on making part. And at the time, and this was the late 90s, there were only two master's programs that I was able to find in the U.S. that offered degrees in costume making instead of costume mm-hmm. design, which really doesn't make a ton of sense because every designer needs to have a team of people to turn their vision into a reality. So mm-hmm. the costume production program at UNC is this full-time 3-year intensive program focusing on custom pattern making and couture sewing and all the fun behind the scenes stuff. So though I'm no longer a costumer, I am so grateful that my background was in costuming instead of fashion, because costume is about character. It's about individuals. And that's just a whole different way to think about clothing and to make clothing than what you'd get from a fashion education.
And what you just said is going to play out more in our discussion later in this episode when we talk about what you're doing today. Who's Judy Adamson?
Judy Adamson is my was my grad school professor. And so she don't have her list of credentials off the top of my head, but she ran the program at UNC, and she worked for Barbara Matera's Broadway costume shop, and she taught me a whole heck of a lot of stuff. So she's someone that I am very grateful to have worked with, and we're still in touch today. Hi, Judy, if you're listening.
Oh, I'm sure she will. Is there any one thing that Judy taught you that really stood out that you remember today?
Well, Judy taught me a lot of things. I really loved a lot of the, you know, sewing stuff that I learned from her. The most memorable class that I can think of that Judy taught that I really loved was one of the classes we took towards the end of the program, to where we would, the whole class was that she would hand us each a sketch or an image from a magazine or something, and then of a garment. And, or sometimes it wasn't even a garment. Maybe it's like, you know, a picture of some, you know, weird, you know, abstract something or other. And we would have to, what we would turn in was the finished garment. And so basically she would hand us the sketch and then we would turn in what it was. And so, so we would have to figure out all the, you know, she would help us along the way, but we would have to figure out all the ins and outs of how to produce, you know, this shape or this line and this, you know. And so there were ones where they were historical, maybe we were doing 20th century garments or something, but there were also ones that were like creative draping. And so we would do very, you know, really wild projects. So anyway, she really encouraged us to figure things out on our own, which is a very valuable skill that I use all the time.
You know, it almost sounds like an art class where the students are given something that they're looking at and then they have to create their own piece from their head and make it real and turn in the final product. So in some ways, as you were doing costume production, you were creating your own type of art.
Yeah, I mean, my master's is a master of fine art in costume production. Yeah. So I literally have I'm a master. I can see the diploma on my wall.
So you mentioned Broadway, and you did work on Broadway. So tell us about the work you did there, the plays you worked on, some of your stories of your adventures.
Yes. Yeah, so after graduating from UNC, I pretty much immediately moved to New York City, and I pretty much immediately got a job working full time as a milliner for Lynn Mackey. And so a milliner is a hat maker, or headpieces are something that's going to go on your head. And so we made hats for Broadway shows and all kinds of other major theatrical productions. I worked on Wicked and Mamma Mia and just countless shows, you know, just making iconic pieces worn by celebrities and designed by, you know, celebrity designers. It was magical. And lately I've been going through old photos and programs recently for a retrospective post on my blog. And so just lots of fun New York memories and makes. Trying to think of a story in particular. But yeah, it was just a very, another amazing experience to have. You know, I was only, you know, 5 years into sewing, I guess, when I got that job. And and it was just really fun.
So you went from two schools that you did a phone interview to, and then stepped right into Broadway. Now you said that you designed hats for several of these shows. Were you able to evolve into other pieces?
No, we were a millinery studio. So basically on Broadway, there are different costume houses all around New York. And so when a new show is coming to town, there's a costume designer. That's not me. I'm not the designer. Very famous people are the designer. And they, and then, you know, the whole team will, different costume houses will bid on different pieces of the show. And so different places will get the job. And so, you know, and so there are people who make hats. There are studios that, you know, only do dyeing and distressing. There are studios that only do, you know, big, crazy, you know, clothing pieces. There are places that do clothing. And the place that I ended up getting a job was the place that made the hats. And I loved it. I love millinery. Like, it's a very, 3D, you know, shape, tactile kind of thing where you are making something. We do fit them. These are very high level. So, you know, each hat is designed specifically for the actor. And so, you know, we take the shape of their heads, you know, and then there's a whole process, you know, where you have to work with the lighting designer, you know, doesn't want the brim of the hat to cover their face, and the sound designer, you know, we're going to have to hide a microphone in there somewhere. So there's also these other like fun technical problem solving aspects, you know, just to someone wearing a hat on stage, and you know, they're going to have to do a sword fight in and or do a whole dance number, and so it has to be really high quality. And it has to fit really well and stay put. And it probably has to, you know, be worn hopefully for months. You know, hopefully the show's a success and you know, you'll wear it out before you ask us for a replacement.
Hey, it's Sarah Joyner. You know that dream studio you have in your head with every machine, notion, and accessory you want? We've all got one, and I just designed mine at BerninaSweepstakes.com. You can design your own too, and then win it. I would just love to see my dream studio come to life. I'd have multiple workstations for many simultaneous projects. Make sure you're in it to win Bernina's Dream Studio $100,000 giveaway. Design your own dream studio at BerninaSweepstakes.com today. Dream it, design it, win it.
So when you eventually left New York, you left sewing for a little while too, and then you came back. Why did you step away from it, and what brought you back?
Well, so it was working in New York is tough. I had been swept up in all of the, you know, late nights and all-nighters and stuff that is expected when you're in college and graduate school and the hustle buzz, the lifestyle of New York and, you know, going to see Broadway shows and doing all these fun, famous things. But I was also like getting tired. Like, I'm glad I did that. But I don't think it's actually my nature to be this like go, go, go person. And so I needed to slow down. When you're making hats, you're hand sewing almost exclusively hand sewing. We do some machine sewing, of course. But you're, you know, using, you know, heavy, odd materials, wires, buckram, felt, all this stuff. And so it's also really hard on your body to do that all day, every day, even if you love it. Mm-hmm. And so, I was totally torn, but ultimately, you know, it seemed like I did it, you know, I had made it to the top. I had already, you know, I wasn't interested in sewing, you know, not many years before. And here I am kind of at the top of what I wanted to accomplish. So it seemed, and then meanwhile, there's this love story going on, you know, my husband, he also enjoyed being in New York, but also is not a hustle bustle guy. And so it was just kind of time for us to slow down, you know, get a house, get a dog, you know, we wanted that kind of stuff. And so I left sewing altogether and theater altogether for a while. I haven't gone back to theater, but how I guess sewing is going to keep pulling me back, whether I like it or not. And I do like it. That's the thing. And so how I got back into it was another kind of split second decision. At Thanksgiving one year, my husband's sister got engaged like right at Thanksgiving dinner. Like her boyfriend who she had brought to Thanksgiving proposed like right before Let's Eat. And so I was like super excited, and I somehow I offered to make her wedding dress.
Swept up in the moment.
I was swept up in the moment and just thinking like, you know, I wanted to do something really nice to, you know, celebrate Katie. And so I offered to make her wedding dress. Well, meanwhile, you know, we had just bought a little mill house that we were renovating. My husband's a carpenter. And so I didn't even have a space. Like, we didn't even have rooms that were complete. And so, so Charles, my husband Charles's gift to Katie was that he built the room for me to build the dress for Katie's wedding dress.
Oh, that's perfect.
So that's perfect. Also how I got a sewing room before I got a living room or a bedroom. So, but we just had this little, 850 square foot mill house, and we turned a quarter of it into a, you know, craft room where we could do crafty projects. And it was mostly, you know, my sewing room, and it all started with Katie's wedding dress. And so, you know, I was just like, anything you want. And so she showed me a picture of this bias cut, you know, silk charmeuse dress. And I was like, okay, let's do it. You know, we switched it. We changed a bunch of stuff, made it even better. And then I made that dress, and it was super fun. And, but what I didn't think about when I offered to make Katie's wedding dress, I guess there was a lot I didn't think about, but was that Charles has another sister. And so the next year she got engaged. And so since I had fun with Katie, and since I had offered that to her, I wanted to celebrate Melissa too. I made Melissa's wedding dress, and she was 6 months pregnant. So I got to play with maternity sewing. And so then the next year I got engaged, Charles and I got engaged, and I made my own dress, and that was great. And, but then my friend Jonathan, as his plus one, brought this woman, Leah, to our wedding, and I didn't really know her. And she, when they got engaged, she remembered my wedding dress and that I had made it, and wanted to know if I could make her a wedding dress. And I was like, okay, so this is like becoming a thing, I guess. And I knew she was cool. I didn't know Leah very well, which is funny because now she's just one of my favorite people in the world and we're dear friends. I knew that this was sort of a good situation because she was sort of a stranger, but she wasn't a total stranger because my friend Jonathan was in love with her and I loved Jonathan. And so I was like, okay, I will make your wedding dress if you figure out how to help me make it a business. And she's like a real business savvy person too. And Jonathan's parents were lawyers. And so they offered to help me with contracts and stuff like that. So I was just like, okay, we'll do this grand experiment with Leah. And then all of a sudden I'm a wedding dress maker. And so now I've got this mini portfolio and I make myself a website, and then strangers started finding me. And so I started just this little wedding dress business out of, a little room in our little house, and just working with people one at a time, you know, making the dress specifically for them. There's no stock or anything. I'm literally just one person. And so we start with the sketch, and then I make the pattern, and we try on mock-ups. You know, I make a fake dress before I make the real dress, and we work it all out. And it's just this super fun, intimate, personal process that I really wanted to offer brides, you know, who don't want to have that like shopping experience. Like, some brides really love to go to the store and try on all the dresses and do all that. And that is great. But it's also great if you don't want that. Like, you can just, you know, find a, you know, custom dressmaker and like work one-on-one and have like a different experience on your wedding day. And so I was trying to help people to provide an alternative to what was out there. I've never made a white strapless ball gown. Like, if you can find it in a store, you should go get it in a store. I want to work with the people who either have, you know, a body that, you know, it doesn't, you know, would take all these alterations and that they don't want to go through that whole process of trying on things that don't fit and all that. You can skip all that. Non-standard bodies are awesome. And then, or someone who has a style that's just out, you know, that's just not something that they can find in a store. Like, I can help you with that too. So that's how I got back into it.
You know, life was not taking no for an answer.
Yeah.
It had a plan for you and just made sure everything stayed in place. I want to talk quickly about how you were explaining your pattern or your process for making the dresses. You have developed a new way to draft pattern blocks without referencing any standard measurements, only, as you say, information from the individual's body, their personal preferences. And I like this. You call it nerdy and it's slow. And you say, of course, it's fun and worth it. But why is it nerdy?
Well, so there's a little bit. So the pattern blocks that I am working with now, that's all new. Those are things that I've just recently developed. So those don't really have that much to do with the wedding dresses. What happened was I made the, as I started making the wedding dresses, well, Leo was the one who suggested that I start a blog in 2009. And so I started blogging the process of how each wedding dress was made behind the scenes, because that's what's interesting to me. To me, like, mm-hmm. the final day where, you know, of course, like, you know, the wedding day when it's going down the aisle is great and a big, huge achievement. But I want to see all the, like, nerdy stuff that's inside. I want to know how it was made. I want to see the behind the scenes stuff. So that's what I was blogging about. And so so I'd blog, you know, little step by step, little process of how the dresses were coming together. And I guess I thought that this was going to attract brides, but brides don't care about sewing. I mean, some do. In fact, I've had like several of my brides have enjoyed the process so much that they now take my online classes. But what I realized is that the blog was attracting home sewing people, people who sew their own clothes at home. And this was a different group of people that I really hadn't known much about. My sewing story was so different from that, that I was just now entering, you know, people do this as a hobby. Oh, I see how things work out. And so that's who was reading my blog. And so I realized that I was getting all these questions from sewing people, and I wanted to be a sewing person and I wanted to join in. And so once I tried to get into the sewing community, I realized that the process of the way that I do things is totally different. So I started teaching and trying to develop my own ways to help with that. So, to answer your question about how that goes, is I guess we should start with, you know, what are pattern blocks, and maybe back a little bit further for context. So there are different ways to make a custom fit clothing pattern. And there are three main ways that I know of. One is starting with something that exists already. So that could be cloning a favorite garment that's in your closet, or taking a standard size pattern and doing adjustments or hacks to make it match your figure or your style. And then another method for creating a custom pattern is called draping. And that's what I use for my brides. So to drape a custom pattern, the starting point is a dress form that is padded to match the specific person. So you start with the body, that's the given, and the thing that's constant. And then you literally just drape pieces of fabric onto the form to create the design and the pattern. So I love draping. And I have a detailed blog post and an ebook all about how to pad a dress form as your body double. It's a method I made up for home sewists. And I hope to teach a draping course sometime soon. But The third way to make a custom pattern, and the one that your question was about, is called flat pattern making. And the starting point for flat pattern making is a tool I call a block. And the block starts with the body, and it offers the same anatomical information that the custom dress form offers. But instead of being 3D, it's flat. It's a 2D version of your body. So the block is a dress form that can be put away in a drawer. So it's really cool. Mm-hmm. And then you can manipulate the template as you design the pattern, and then you'll always know where the body fits inside of each pattern piece. So it's also really fun to design clothes this way, because the fit is taken care of. So instead of playing around with fitting adjustments, you get to play around with style. But the big question is, how do you turn all the curves and slopes of an individual's body into something flat? And so this was a question that really intrigued me, especially when I knew I wanted to teach people who sew for themselves. And I wanted to teach methods that would be simple enough for beginners. And they may not want to invest in a dress form and might not have the physical or mental space for a life-size replica of themselves. So, when I was in grad school, to make blocks, we did modify standard fashion formulas to create the blocks. And so you would open up a fashion textbook, you'd follow a long set of instructions and plot a bunch of points with letters. And there's blanks where you can add some of your custom measurements from the person's body. But there's also like a lot of standard measurements thrown in and a lot of assumptions about the person that's built into the steps. So it's real technical and math driven, and it really doesn't offer much understanding of how this is making the map of the body. I mean, it's kind of fun, honestly. I love nerdy stuff like plotting points and stuff, but to me, it had more questions than it had answers. And I thrive when I understand the logic behind each step. And with these fashion formulas, I was just following along and the do this, then do that, you know, kind of mostly blind. And I really longed to understand what I was doing, you know, where I could eliminate assumptions and charts and math. So I love research. And there had to be methods for creating blocks that weren't originally intended to create a standard block and then customize to work for a person. I wanted to find a method that started with the person and never referenced any of those standards, since, you know, the averages are irrelevant if you've got the person right in front of you. And I never found it. And so with every method I investigated, there was always something about it that didn't make any sense to me. And I know what I'm doing. And so I could see why beginners would feel like they were ill-equipped to try pattern making. And pattern making is something that I love and I wanted to share. But I was seeing this side of it that just made me confused and disappointed when it's such a powerful thing. So when I couldn't find what I was looking for, I realized that it was going to have to be me. I was going to have to come up with the methods that I wanted to share. And I was passionate enough and I had this unusual background that I thought made me uniquely qualified. So if I couldn't find it, I needed to make it up for myself. And so for the past 9 or so years, that's what I've been doing. I'm developing my own like easy to follow, beginner friendly methods to create flat pattern blocks that make no assumptions about the wearer's body, only uses information from the body itself or the personal preferences. And they're designed specifically for those who are sewing their own clothing. So it's no starting with a fashion formula or fashion textbooks. And it's pretty magical. When you go through the process to make your own block that matches your own body, you learn about yourself, and then fitting can become intuitive and even fun. I mean, it's been great to show people how to sew where there are no sizes or plus sizes or ranges or, you know, apples or pears. Everyone can just be themselves. So it's really empowering. And,
you know, I had mentioned earlier in this podcast that we would come full circle and see how your training, your costuming, your love for costume production really played out into what you're doing now. And you just spelled it out, but you almost costume each individual, based on what they like, what they need. So your training served you well. Now, you learned couture as a beginner. Define couture for us, and what did you learn about it?
Okay, good question. Well, learning couture as a beginner was everything to me. I love the process. And when I think of it, okay, so when I was 16 and I was learning to drive, my dad made me learn on a manual transmission. He said I could take my test on an automatic, I could drive an automatic car, but if I only learned the shortcut, then you're cheating yourself out of a lot of the true learning. And easier doesn't necessarily mean more fun. I mean, some people think it's more fun to drive a stick shift, even though an automatic gets you to the same destination with less effort.
Mm-hmm.
So what is couture? Well, couture literally means fine sewing. And it means choosing quality over quickness. And it usually means that the garment was designed and created for one specific individual. So I call it custom sewing since couture sounds so fancy. But it's basically sewing for a person, a specific person, their style, their body, their preferences. And it's a really fun way to sew. Like you said about the theater background, I do see design as a character-based thing. Then I tell my people, like, okay, if you want to design this outfit, like, think about how the character that you're playing in your life today, you know, wants to get mm-hmm. dressed. It's more than like, you know, expressing my fashion sense or whatever. I don't have any fashion sense. I just take information from a person and then just try to enhance them. You know, so most clothes and patterns are designed and created for ranges or target markets or the masses. And so in that sense, averages and formulas are important since the goal is to fit the most people possible. And so fashion mm-hmm. fits everyone in general, but no one specifically. But couture fits one person and nobody else. So you're not going to be able to start a fashion line. You're not going to be able to make clothes that fit a bunch of people. You're just going to be able to make one thing for one person. So, and the finishes too, fashion sewing is mostly about factory style finishes, and couture is more about letting the materials and the process just unfold as you work and tailoring each specific technique to match the exact situation that you're in, you know, taking your time. There's no instruction booklet. The garment's one of a kind. So you figure out the process of creating it as you're creating it. It's really fun. So
what inspires you these days?
So what inspires me these days? Well, you know, as you can probably tell, like, I'm a research and unanswered questions person. So a lot of my inspiration these days are these unanswered questions, like mm-hmm. solving I love this puzzle solving aspect of sewing, the detective work, the experiments. I like to ponder each step and take my time. And sewing helps me slow down. And I love that it's so flexible and editable. So I guess the custom process itself and all the options that it offers, and that I'll never stop learning new things is what inspires me these days. And but I guess really my inspiration and my motivation comes from the individuals that I work with, whether it's a bride-to-be or my students. Mm-hmm. I learned so much from my students. They're the ones asking those questions that, you know, really get my head going. So they keep me pushing to learn more and to keep solving puzzles. And teaching has really taught me to organize my thoughts and practices and to keep things simple enough for a beginner to thrive. So it's those individuals that, you know, really spark my fire and get me going.
Roxanne, what's next for you? What's your dream?
The dream. Okay, so what is next for me is a new dream studio. So over 2 years ago, my husband and I moved out to the country. We bought a property with a bunch of woods. And then my husband's blazed all these trails that we like to go out in. And then in addition to the house that we live in now, there's this little old broken down 1910 farmhouse that is going to become my sewing studio. Mm-hmm. So my husband's a carpenter and I'm good at DIY stuff too. And so it's slowly happening. Of course, it's a huge undertaking that's going to take a lot of time and money and health, like all at specific amounts of times. But I'm patient. I'm a couturier. I take things one step at a time.
Sure. Sure. That serves you very well in many places. And we will look forward to pictures of this amazing new studio as you create it. We hope you have that on your blog and finally the finished product. And who knows, it might be a sewing visit destination for people someday.
Come out to the country.
Indeed. And because your husband's got the trails, so it's yep. Perfect. Brooksanne, we talked about a lot of fun things today. Is there any question I didn't ask you that you wish I had?
Oh, gosh. I'm sure y'all have heard enough from me. I work alone and I live out in the woods. And so when someone wants to talk to me, especially about sewing, my favorite subject, is hard to shut me up. So I'm just happy I was able to put together words and make it through this interview. I do so much writing that I forget how much fun it is to chat with someone about sewing. So really, I guess I just want to say thank you, Meg, for having me on my show and to listen to me gab off the cuff. I mean,
there's some great stories here, and it's been a wonderful conversation. Thank you for sharing your story with us today. I know our listeners are going to want to reach out to you. What's the best way for them to do that?
The best way to get in touch with me is to go to brooksanne.com, BROOKSANN.com. There's no E in Brooks or Anne. And that website will link you to all three of my other websites. So that will link you to my bridal website, and then it'll link you to my blog. And it will also link you to my education website, my sewing school, my online sewing school. And or if you just want to go straight to the online sewing school, it's learnwithbrooksanne.com. And then I'm on Instagram at brooksannecamper. And all those places will have my email address if you want to reach out to me. And I'd love to keep in touch.
Terrific. Thank you again for joining us today.
Thank you, Meg.
Well, there you have it. Another story about someone just like you. Someone for whom sewing and quilting is much more than a hobby. It's a way of life. It's a connection to something bigger. If you know someone you think has an outstanding story, a story that should be shared on this podcast, please drop me a note to meg@soandsopodcast.com or just complete the form on our website. Be sure to subscribe to, review, and rate this podcast on your favorite platform. And visit our website, soandsopodcast.com, for more information about today's and all of our guests. That's SEWANDSO podcast.com. And finally, I want to thank Bernina for making this program possible. I'm Meg Goodman, and I look forward to you joining us next time on So and So.